And welcome to Thrift Shop Biography. This is the one about Will Smith. Thank you for listening.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right.
What book have you been reading this week?
Will Smith's book. What's it called?
Will.
Will, yeah.
The Autobiography of Willard Smith.
Willard Carroll Smith, the second.
The second. Were you a fan of Will Smith before you read this book?
Well, my bruv, again, it's his fault because he was watching The Fresh Prince all the time. If it wasn't for that, I probably wouldn't have heard of him until he became a mega film star. I guess you couldn't avoid some of the music in the 90s. I guess he's just everywhere, isn't he? I didn't realise he was like world number one box office draw.
Okay.
Until reading this. Did you?
Yeah.
Have you seen all his films?
I'm very aware of all of his films. They were massive, like from Independence Day onwards. I was very aware that he was the biggest box office star in the world.
Oh, right. I've only seen Independence Day of his list.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Have you not even seen Men in Black?
No.
Not seen Hancock?
No.
Not seen I Am Legend?
I have finally seen, I've seen that King Richard, which is the one where he's a dad of the Williams sisters. And that was really recently. That's one he just got an Oscar for. Mm-hmm. It's a slap Oscar. But that happened after this book was written. Only just.
Yeah. I'm completely torn by Will Smith because I was a fan up until the slap.
Oh, so now what? You've read this book and now how do you feel?
Well, I've read this book and I feel if I had read this book before the slap, I would have found out he was a really egocentric person prone to violence before.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have surprised you at all. Okay, so if anybody doesn't know, at the Oscars in 2022, and it's 1 year after this book was published, he was at the Oscars, Chris Rock was presenting, and he made some joke about Will Smith's wife, Jada, having no hair, which is a contentious issue because she has an actual problem, alopecia. Will Smith got up onto the stage of the live Oscar ceremony and slapped Chris Rock in the face hard. It was shocking. And then he won an Oscar.
Right. I have not watched that slap recently. After I finished reading this book, like an hour ago, I watched the slap again. It's not so much the slap, which is bizarre in itself. What I think is the problem with Will Smith, he did that. He slapped Chris Rock with the whole world watching.
On the stage.
And then people kind of are sniggering because they think, oh, this is obviously a sketch.
Yeah, people thought it was a sketch and then it all went weirdly, awkwardly silent.
And then Will Smith sits back down. He shouts to Chris Rock, keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth. The audience are kind of hushing because they're like, oh, this isn't a sketch. Then when Will Smith's done that, he says it again, even angrier.
Yeah.
I mean, it's genuinely terrifying. It keeps escalating.
Yeah, it's a really nasty, threatening thing.
Gosh.
And Chris Rock, he's like, wow, okay. And he really doesn't know what to do. It looks like he almost wants to cry.
Of course. But I think he handled it really well, considering. And then what happens? Will Smith wins Best Oscar and everybody gives him a standing ovation. It's utterly bizarre.
Yeah. And Jada, his wife, is now saying, you know, because she's all doing this publicity tour for her book. She's now saying, that slap is what said to me, I will never leave this man. It's brought our marriage together, the way he stood up for me. This book is one big, long build-up to that slap almost. It's so weird, actually, because when this book starts, he kind of explains that his dad used to beat up his mum, and once he hit her so hard, she collapsed on the floor, there's blood spurting from her head. That's the very beginning of this book. And he says, it defined me. The way I thought of myself is a coward. I didn't do anything to help my mum. I stood there and I've always thought I was a coward. And then this whole book is a big build-up to not be a coward.
It's weird because when I read this book, especially at the beginning, I kind of thought, oh, he's obviously writing it because he slapped someone.
That's what
and
I
now
thought.
This is a huge explanation about why he slapped someone.
But of course,
someone.
We do know you can't just knock out a book like this. It takes years for these people to get these books.
I know,
together.
But I thought that maybe he'd gone back in and tweaked the beginning a bit.
Yeah, but then it doesn't. It runs all the way through it.
Plus,
it was published 1 year before that slap. Basically, so, we just got to know him, and that is who he is.
I know, you and I'm so disappointed
him, but
by that.
I never
that.
Knew him, so it doesn't mean anything to me.
He really was on a pedestal by basically the whole world.
Right.
We loved Will Smith. He was just so...
So I didn't know any different other than it was a shocking thing to happen live on the Oscars.
Oh, do you know what? If you'd have said to me before that happened, who is the person who is least likely to do this, it would have been Will Smith.
Right, because he's a lovable rogue. Well, I've been watching... I've done lots of homework and I've been watching clips of stuff like Fresh Prince. He is a lovable rogue. He's hilarious. He's so energetic.
Even, do you know what? I wouldn't even call him a rogue. I just think he's a lovable, nice bloke.
Oh, right. He was really, really safe. And they marketed him and his music and everything as being the safe gateway into rap. If you're a bit scared of black rappers, you could be all right and safe with Will. And that's how it opened the door to let rap music into the mainstream. It was Will who opened that door because he was safe. That's who he is. And the safe man got violent.
Yeah.
And it's upset people.
Oh, I think it turns out that he was never the nice, safe, middle-class boy that we were led to believe. I think he always had this edge to him.
Yeah, he clearly does.
Yeah. It's just they chose to market him that way, you know, because he's entirely charming.
Yes.
He's entirely charming. He comes across as bloody lovely. He really does.
And he's worked his ass off to promote that. It's an amazing book of an incredibly determined and ambitious man, like military ambitious.
Okay.
Yeah, if you think that's a good thing.
But that discipline and militaristic work ethic comes from his dad.
Yeah.
Can I just have another little complaint about him?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was so irritating. He calls his mum, Mom, and he calls his dad, Daddy-o.
Yeah.
And he talks about them nearly on every page in this book. And every time he calls them Mom, and Daddy-o, it's so... I was so annoyed. I had to try and retrain my brain that, okay, when I see Mom, I can just say Mum in my head.
Oh, well done. I never got past that.
Oh, did you not find it irritating?
Yes.
I mean, just another reason not to like him.
And I watched all these clips of Fresh Prince and he calls his dad Daddy-o in that as well.
Oh, really?
His dad's only in it for a small part.
Right. Well, his dad was like a naughty, unruly child who then
got drafted
into the army, thrived under the discipline.
He drafted himself in the army to get out of agricultural school that he was put in because he was naughty.
Right.
And he couldn't get out of it. So at 16, he ran away and drafted himself into the army because they couldn't pull him out of that. He found he absolutely loved discipline and he memorised all of it and inflicted it on everyone else for the rest of his life. But he finally got kicked out because he got mad about something and pulled a gun and shot the place up.
Wow.
Which is what Will Smith says is what always happens with him. He's focused, he's dedicated, he's ambitious, and then at some point he'll drink and it'll explode and he'll self-destruct and destruct others around him. And that's the pattern of his whole life.
Mm. And his mum's a nice lady who works in a bank.
Yes. And she's a very clever, business-minded woman who's worked her way up. Both of them worked so hard to get to where they got. Because once his dad left the army, he got a job in a steel mill by day, took himself to night school at night to do an engineering course, and then started his own business. And at that time, this is in the 50s going into the 60s, unthinkable that a man in that area, which is Philadelphia, that a black man could own a business and employ white people, and that's where he got to. So he really achieved.
He was successful because Will Smith refers to his upbringing as middle class. Mm. And, you know, they moved to a nice area. And he says that because of that, the perception of him when he got into rap, nobody took him seriously because he wasn't from the streets. He went to a Catholic school, which was largely white. He was well-spoken. He was...
Some people may say that he isn't of the calibre of the actual real rappers, though.
I was surprised because I thought he came up through the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I didn't know that Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, the musical act, came first.
Yeah.
Reason I didn't think that is because the music's crap in terms of rap. So you kind of think this is obviously novelty rap that TV stars would do.
Because it's quite childlike.
Yeah, I didn't think it was like genuine bona fide hip-hop and rap.
Yeah. His mum and dad got married. They'd both been married before and both had daughters called Pam, which is weird. Then they had Will. Then they had twins. His brother and sister called Harry and Ellen.
The thing that I was surprised about is that Will is the oldest kid, but the younger brother and sister are like much tougher than he is.
Yeah.
Which actually makes Will, he keeps referring to himself as a coward.
Yeah.
And his sense of being a coward. And that doesn't help because his dad, it torments the children. Yeah. and he witnesses him being violent, but his little brother stands up to his dad.
Yeah.
Whereas Will is scared of his dad.
And supports his mother.
Yes. Whereas Will doesn't. And his sister is like a little tough black woman in the making. So she stands up for herself as well. But Will is this skinny, gangly kid who really lacks confidence and is totally dominated by his dad.
Mm. And worships him at the same time.
Yeah.
By the way, I Googled their address. It's a lovely street. There's this massive school right opposite their house.
Is and it?
Look, he said there's tons of kids always for them to play with. And he says that his school was mostly white. There's like three black kids. And at school, he learned to please the white kids and make everyone like him and not be bullied. Then he'd go into his community, his neighbourhood and his church, pretty much all black kids, and he had to completely adapt his humour. It's really interesting, actually, because he was well primed to go to television and entertain the broad spectrum of America because he'd actually knew the difference and how to pitch your comedy. It's a real craft to be able to know how to please everybody. It was his main desire was to please everybody. So everyone was happy. And the more laughs he got, the more he felt loved.
But I think that's also the key to his music not being accepted by the hip-hop community because he's trying to please everybody with it. The white people, the black people and the grannies.
Yes.
And so, you know, he can moan about not being accepted by the black community, but you ain't going to be the biggest box office star in the world unless you cater to everyone.
Yeah.
So you can't have it all.
You can't, can you? So he was doing pretty good. Then he met Jazzy Jeff and he was such an innovator. He was living in his mother's basement, just doing nuts. Like he said, 14 to 18 hours a day. He just lived and breathed it. They ended up going to New York and he won the Battle for World Supremacy, a DJ and MC competition in New York City. And all the greats had been through there.
Grandmaster Flash, Melly Mel, Mantronix, they'd all won it.
Yeah.
And Jazzy Jeff went and won it
in
1986.
It's so cool
how
he describes it.
So he's very good at what he does.
That good, yeah.
Yeah.
And he said he's such an innovator. People in hip hop are still using what he invented to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can only take his word for it because I've given him the benefit of doubt and listened to quite a few of their tunes and I'm not hearing legendary rapping.
No, I think it really sounds like major label, mainstream supermarket hip hop and rap.
For kids.
Yeah.
Which it was.
They were like hip hop for toddlers.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's cool though, like the I Dream of Jeannie. You know, some of the samples and the things they used were brilliant. And maybe that influenced hip-hop.
No. Hip-hop had already happened by the time they came.
That's true.
They were latecomers.
Oh, yeah, they really were.
This is 1986.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much cool stuff happens.
So Jazzy Jeff has won this big award in New York City. And then they obviously are meeting people that day. And one of them is a brother of the guy who founded Pop Art Records, which is a little successful hip-hop New York-based label. And they make some tapes and they hand them out. And then this guy says, hey, Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince, do you want to make a record? So that's how it happens. From winning that award, they quite soon, at the beginning of 1986, get a recording contract, which they both sign, and they release the song Girls Ain't Nothing But Trouble, which is the I Dream of Jeannie sample.
Yeah.
Right?
Anyway, they toured. Once they got picked up on the radio, which is obviously...
Yeah.
They got a full tour opening for Public Enemy and Two Live Crew.
Yes, but aren't you surprised at this? Public Enemy and Two Live Crew are properly authentic hardcore rap.
Well, yeah.
And Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince aren't.
No, it's a weird opening act. It's like it's amazing they didn't get booed off stage.
I know, it's like getting Jason Donovan to open for Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, actually, he says Chuck D was railing against social injustice that was shared with the crowd. So it was really political. And every night, every single night, they enacted hanging a KKK member on the stage. That's a massive statement. And Two Live Crew got the whole crowd shouting, "We want some pussy."
Yeah.
And then you've got Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince going, "My mom doesn't like this.
Yeah.
My parents don't understand me. Girls are so much trouble."
It's an odd mix.
Yeah.
Which made me think, therefore, in 1986, that Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince were way cooler hip-hop people than I ever thought they were.
That must be what it is, though. Also, I have seen him do the live show and he's so confident. He struts up and down. You know, he could get the crowd going almost singing anything.
I know, but when you think of Will Smith rapping, he's almost not like a rapper. He's almost just like a game show host.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like a deep Hollywood voice. It's not like an authentic urban vernacular that he's spouting. It's very, he's almost very, very polished, I think.
Yeah, he's very polished.
Now, look, we've read the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
They were middle class rich boys. Yes. But their hip hop was actually very authentic.
Well, it really was. So, yeah. It doesn't matter really where you're from. It matters what you're doing with the music.
Yeah.
What they're doing was very family friendly.
Yeah. Anyway.
Here's the amazing list of who they toured with. In 86 to 88, they did over 200 shows with Run-DMC, Salt-N-Pepa, Eric B and Rakim, NWA, The Beastie Boys, Sir Mix-a-Lot, Queen Latifah, Grandmaster Flash, Ice-T, Mantronix, MC Hammer, Dougie Fresh, Big Daddy Kane, A Tribe Called Quest, Naughty by Nature, and so many more. That's everyone who's unbelievably epically cool at that exact point.
And MC Hammer.
They put me in the mix. Fair. But I mean, that's all before the Fresh Prince, and they were right in the heart of that music scene.
Yeah.
They must have had good tunes.
So, look, they were very successful. Mm. That first album, it didn't like have massive chart placings, but like you say, they went on an extensive tour. They were played on the radio. They got signed by Jive Records, actually, for an international deal. So that's the big thing about giving them worldwide sales. And that first album sold 500,000 copies. And then their second album ended up selling 4 million copies. But the interesting thing about the Jive deal is their original manager that they met at the World Supremacy Awards, who got them to sign the contract, didn't want to deal with Jive. And Will Smith and Jazzy Jeff are kind of like, hang on a minute, this is a massive international deal. And so he tried to prevent it from happening. And then Jive Records, because they'd invested already in them, took him to court. And then they pulled up the contract that they'd signed. Turns out Will Smith was only 17 when he signed it, which means it wasn't legally binding, which meant that that manager was gone from that day, and they signed properly with Jive Records. And then this mate called James Lasseter, who he calls JL in the book, they took him as a manager because they were impressed he had a fax machine. That's really funny.
Yeah, and he's really amazing. He's a character all through this. And he was going to law school, and he was funding it by working in the hospital at night. And then when he decided to become their manager, he spent day and night just researching the music industry. And then when they signed with Jive, he said, if I sign them with you, will you teach me the music business, which they did. And later on in Hollywood, he's the one who looks Will in the eye and go, Will, what do you actually want? And he says, I want to become the biggest movie star in the universe. JL says, that's a goal I can work with. And then he just dives into the world of Hollywood, reads every script that's going, he's analysed them. They scientifically work out what it is that makes a film star. He's the man you need on your side.
It's amazing, actually, because a lot of these books that we've read already, just thinking of like Madonna, her massive worldwide fame came because she tracked down Michael Jackson's manager.
Yeah.
She worked with somebody who'd been there and done it before. But this guy,
he invented himself along with Will Smith.
He created the biggest box office star of the last 20 years.
His advice was amazing. Yeah. He's like, this film isn't right. 8 heads in a duffel bag.
I was surprised that he got offered that. And amazing to think that he turned it down. But that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, this was after Fresh Prince. That would have paid him $10
million. Yeah.
But then he said, or you could work for $300,000 and take 6 degrees of separation with Ian McKellen.
Stockard Channing. Oh, we're getting really ahead of ourselves. We are. I want to talk about Stockard Channing.
But this is how wise he is.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, it's much better to do this film. So we'll turn down $9,700,000.
Yes.
To do the right thing. And that's JL. He's absolutely amazing. Everyone needs one.
So their fame is growing. And it's at this point that Will Smith meets this guy called Charlie. Because Will Smith needs a security guard.
Yeah.
So this guy called Charlie, who doesn't sound like a great guy to be hanging around with, to be quite honest.
He says you just get your biggest mate who doesn't smile. And he was 6'7", but he also ran drugs and guns and stuff.
Yeah. So he said to him, stop running the guns and the drugs and come and be my security guy.
Yeah. He gave him a second chance in life, didn't he?
Yeah. He actually says, that the chemistry with Charlie was incredible. And he said it's because they were both incredibly competitive and they both had absolutely delusional in their own self-regard.
Oh, right.
So Will Smith admits that he is absolutely delusional in his own self-regard.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what leads you to smack somebody live on TV, you know.
Because you're invincible.
You're God.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And do you know what? Now, here's the thing. As much as Will Smith loves his relationship with Charlie, and it lasts for years, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Now, bearing in mind, the first few chapters of this book are Will Smith complaining about how much of a coward he feels he is because he never stuck up for his mum when his dad was hitting her. So now he's got 6'7" brick shit house Charlie next to him. Will Smith is basically beating people up. Somebody might give him a bit of hassle because he's famous, and Charlie would say to him, just punch him in the face. And so Will Smith would punch that person in the face. He goes, I punched him in the face and then jumped behind Charlie.
Yeah, and he can finish the job.
So how cowardly is that?
Yeah, you're right.
And then he's saying that it got to the point where if anybody looked at me sideways, I would just beat them up. Because he had this massive guy to back him up. That is the most basic description of a coward.
Yeah.
But in this book, he doesn't even seem to make the connection as he's writing it.
Yeah, you're right.
He's like saying, oh, no, I'm a coward. I got to make up for being a coward. Yet he gets his bodyguard, he beats people up and jumps behind him.
Yeah.
You are a coward.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. This book, if the slap didn't ruin my adoration for Will Smith.
This book would have. Yeah, because he does out himself. It is true. I don't know if he knows how much he's outed himself.
Oprah Winfrey, on this book, the tagline by Oprah Winfrey, the best memoir I've ever read. No, you're not telling me she hasn't read the autobiography of Malcolm X. She hasn't read Long Walk to Freedom. She hasn't read Dreams of My Father. Will Smith is the best memoir she's ever read. No, it's not.
You know, they're just in the super rich club. Like the richest people.
No, I'm incensed.
That's what it is, though. The people who are so rich, they can only hang out with each other. That's their club, isn't it? I can't even fully comprehend. But I'm very interested in... I'm very interested how he became the biggest film star in the world on purpose. I think it's actually fascinating that he analysed how to do it and then went out and did it and succeeded in doing it. That alone is just a process. It's amazing.
Listen, I enjoyed reading his rise to fame, but I didn't like the man. If you can enjoy a book and not like the central character.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So what happened is they lost it all. They got too big for their boots and spunked it all away.
He
bought a house, he'd got a jacuzzi in his bedroom, he'd moved his girlfriend in who cheated on him and he went and got her back, beat up her boyfriend.
He tells this story about where his girlfriend cheats on him and he meets her at her aunt's house.
Yeah.
And they have something to eat and then the aunt goes to bed, Will Smith and his girlfriend have this conversation about her cheating on him. He says there's an iron or something, and he picks it up. He walks out to the porch and he breaks every window in it. He says there's about 12 or 14 windows in his girlfriend's aunt's house, this old lady's house.
Yeah. You know what it is? He wants to be his dad. He thinks his dad's really cool. One of the first photos in this book is a picture of his dad on the phone. He goes, this is my dad in his office. Probably not even on the phone. He just knows he looks fly. He worships his dad, doesn't he? He wants to be like him and he knows he's violent and bad-tempered.
He says that seeing his dad hit his mum and that being the defining moment of his life and him wanting to make up for not helping his mum for the next 40 years and yet he displays this kind of behaviour.
Because subconsciously he thought that's a real man. It must be.
This is interesting, right? This is what he says about smashing those windows. So he walked then to his own house, which is 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
And he says, I couldn't locate where it had come from within me. It seemed so strange to me to break things because I thought I should, not because I was at all emotionally impelled to do so. So he's performing. He's not feeling it. He didn't think,
So you think that relates to the slap? He thought he should do it because he looked at his wife and he thought, I must defend her.
Yes. He's doing what he thinks he should do. He's been cheated on, so he's a big man, so he's going to break something. You know, and then what is even weirder, so he's walking home from doing that. And then when he gets home, his mum is sat on the stoop because the girlfriend's aunt has called her and says, this is what your boy has done. When Will Smith sees his mum sat on the steps of his stoop, he falls on the floor and he begins sobbing. And then his mum comes over, cradles him, and he can feel her tears on the back of his neck. She picks him up and she takes him inside. It's like he's a fucking 20 years old at this point.
Okay, his heart is broken. I do think his heart was broken by being cheated on.
No, no, his heart is not broken. What's happened is that his girlfriend shagged somebody else, and that hurt his male pride. Yes.
Because later on, he goes to her shop where she was working. The boyfriend was in there and he beats him up and grabs her, and it feels like he flung her in the back of the car.
Do you know why he did that? Charlie, his security guard, was with him. He also trashed the shop. The girl couldn't go back to work.
Oh, yeah. So he claimed possession of woman and then installed her in his fancy pit pad with his drug dealer mates that he admits he had.
Yeah.
Because they're the only people rich enough to hang out with him, and they're playing pool and gambling all the time and stuff. And he never got over her cheating. And eventually she goes out all dolled up and he sets fire to all her belongings on the lawn when she gets back, and they never spoke again. He said, I've reached out to her many times in the years. She didn't deserve it. I was at a low point. He was a victim of the lowest point in my life. But also they just thought it would last forever and they didn't realise it wouldn't. So he got lost the house. They lost everything. And he said, being on the way down and you're nobody, and people who used to party with him were shutting doors to them. And the humiliation of it.
Oh, yeah, he couldn't get in on the guest list or anything, could
Nothing.
He
was absolutely out.
So, really, for most people who get, like, a little boost of success at some point, it ends that here.
And he would have spunked away something like $3 million. How did he manage that? How embarrassing.
Well, I tell you how he managed it, because he had this entourage of, like, 10 people he would fly to Jamaica and entertain.
Oh, He never went anywhere without his entourage.
Yeah, because the money came easily. They hit success relatively easily. Yeah. They got millions of dollars easily, and so he spent it as easily.
Living it up as many people would do. But because he knew the total down and out of it, and because he had to work so hard, and it was almost chance that he got a second chance, I think that's why he was so insanely focused on succeeding, because he knew loss. That focus is what's carried him on right till today.
Also, the next step which leads him onto his massive success is basically because he's running away, because he's hanging out with all the wrong people, drug dealers and gangsters. And his friend says to him, you do realize, because these people have been hanging out with you and you've been giving them money, the FBI are onto them, and you're a part of this now because you've been giving them money. That's going to be really hard to explain. Will Smith had no money at this point. He said he was absolutely broke. That friend had to lend him money so he could fly to LA. And he'd been to LA a couple of times. He did know people out there. But the reason he went to LA when things started happening for him was basically to get out of gangland.
Yeah. The FBI were closing in on his whole scene. And that mate who lent him 10 grand got shot 3 days later. Yeah. And he says because they all turn on each other when they know the FBI are coming. Yeah. I guess so they can't. Sell stories on each other.
If you wanted to, you could look at this scenario and say that Will Smith is a coward.
Yes, you could.
It's amazing how much of a coward he actually is, and he just doesn't think so.
Yeah, you're right.
So they're in LA, and he takes Charlie with him, right? Of course, because he needs a bodyguard because he's a coward.
Yes. And he says he's having a massive breakdown. He gets together with that woman, Tanya. And Tanya, probably. And he's completely depressed and he holes up with her. And it's her saying, get out. You've got to do something. And he's like, oh. And she's like, no, go to see Arsenio, your friend, Arsenio Hall, who has his own chat show. And she's going, go to his show. I think it's filmed 5 nights a week. So he's there for 3 months, most nights. And everyone's on that show. And he meets everybody.
In the green room before.
Yeah.
He's not on the show. He's just hanging out.
Not on it. He's hanging out, just schmoozing. Yeah,
but bloody hell, it pays off.
Big time. So after 3 months of that, finally this bloke turns up.
Benny Medina.
Yeah. He's the A&R executive of Warner Brothers Records, and they're just chatting. And he goes, hey, can you act? He goes, yes, of course I can. She just say yes. And the next thing he knows, he's getting a phone call. Hey, Quincy Jones is on the phone. Of course he is. No, he isn't. Yeah, he is. He's like, hey, man, come to my party tonight. He's like, okay. Turns up, Stevie Wonder turns up, Steven Spielberg's there, Lionel Richie's there. He can't believe it. And the head of NBC Quincy Jones is really drunk and he's saying, yeah, I want you to audition. Get that script. And she says, yeah, we're going to put this TV show together. They want it to be the Fresh Prince of Hollywood, but Bel-Air's better. Quincy Jones lives in Bel-Air. And he's like, Bel-Air's way cooler than Hollywood. Let's call it the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He's just making it up on the spot, so it seems. He doesn't even know where he's from. You're from Philly? Great. The character will be from Philly. We'll make it, like, based around you. It's amazing. So he gets him to there and then audition, basically. He clears the whole room with these sorts of people.
I know, right?
Watching. He's going, I don't want to do it now. I'll do it next week. Let me hire an acting coach and prepare. He's like, no paralysis through analysis. That's his favourite catchphrase. He says it over and over. He's like, okay, we'll do it now. And he brings the house down. 20 minutes later, all those amazing people are applauding him. He goes, you've got the job. And he said the party was on the 14th of March, 1990. The first episode aired September 1990.
That's so quick.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And it was so fresh. I think it was really, I think it was a massive hit immediately.
Yeah,
everybody loved it.
Yeah.
And he had a new family. He realised he loved acting. He loved storytelling, loved performing. He was a comedian. You know, it's really fun. He's clowning.
It's great.
Yeah.
It is the family-centric granny-pleasing behaviour that Will Smith is really good at, where he's not accepted in his hip-hop, that excels in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That's what it is. Yeah. Like, everybody loves him.
Yeah.
And it is a massive, massive hit from the word go. Mm. And he loves it. He loves that environment. He loves all the people he's working with.
Yeah.
Talks about them all so fondly in this book. That runs for like six seasons, I think.
It's amazing.
But it did not take him too long for like this nasty side of him to come out. So they're all having a great time filming this sitcom. And then I think one of the, like, he tries to change some of the script. Obviously, he's been there a while and he's getting confident.
Yeah.
And he tries to change a couple of lines in the script. And one of the executives objects to it. And they call a meeting up in the office. So it's Will with the manager, JL, and this executive and a couple of other people. And the executive's kind of saying to Will Smith, you know, we do have to do things a certain way here because of time and stuff, so we'd appreciate it if you didn't, blah, blah, blah. Will Smith jumps up off the couch, squares up to him. This is like an old executive in a suit. He basically threatens his life.
Yeah, but the way he describes it is that the bloke kept walking behind him. It was really triggering him to his past life because he's going behind him. Now, that's almost like if you come out of prison and you've learned certain ways, like you don't walk behind someone, you know, because that's threatening to you.
He just has this streak of violence that keeps coming out.
Yeah, you're right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Anyway, then they record another album because now, even though the music career went down the pan, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is a massive hit. Jazzy Jeff is on it as well.
Oh, yeah. He persuaded Jazzy Jeff to come to LA. He didn't want to leave his mother's basement at all.
Well, he's into the music.
Yeah. Whilst the Fresh Prince was throwing his money around on mansions with jacuzzis and pool tables, Jazzy Jeff had invested it all into what he said was like Star Trek in his mother's basement, and he was just doing music, wasn't he? He's a total nerd. And he has to keep pestering him to come, and then says that his character was just absolutely one of the most loved characters on the whole thing. And I watched a bit of it, and how are these people not natural actors?
Yeah, I know.
How did he just say, come out of his mother's basement and be that good? He was great. Yeah. It's really cool.
So because of their shared success on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, they revive the music career. And of course, they have all this exposure now. So they have the albums more or less finished. And then somebody approaches them with a track. They'd already left. I think they were even flying back.
He was at the airport and the flight was delayed.
Right. And then
so he had a listen.
And it was Summertime.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. And they went back and recorded it. It became their biggest hit to date.
Yeah. So the music was massively successful.
And then he meets this woman called Cherie. He's met Jada, by the way.
Oh, my God. Were you reading this going, no? Because he's met Jada. They've met in the corridor. She totally dismissed him and he was in love immediately. So he was like, I need to get that girl. So they arranged to go to watch her being filmed in a different world. She was in that. Sits down next to this other woman, makes her laugh so much she's crying, goes home with her and marries her. Oh, and you're reading it going, oh, he's about to marry. Hang on.
Yeah.
He goes off with the wrong woman.
I know.
And then they have a child.
Yeah.
Willard Carroll Smith III. There's an ego.
Yeah.
The dad passes it on, passes it on. That's two egos right there.
I think having kids is egotistic. Stop. Let alone naming them after yourself. Yeah.
But you're like, especially because you know that he's meant to be with Jada. You're like, No. But anyway, she stays in his life to this day. And they're just really good friends and they...
Yeah, they've had their problems.
But, oh, yeah, they went through it.
Because it's hard being married to such an egotist.
Yes. One of the main reasons they got divorced is because he went all method. So he went to do this film, fell in love with Stockard Channing because they were supposed to be in love in the film. He morphed into this character. So he was this bloke who was in love with this older woman and just wasn't him. He changed how he walked, how he talked. And so suddenly Cherie was married to a stranger and he was in love with Stockard Channing, who just wasn't having it.
Yeah. He says she's an old pro, so she got what was happening.
Yeah.
Because he said after they rapped on that film, he couldn't stop thinking about...
Hey.
He couldn't stop thinking. He says, I found myself desperately yearning to see and speak to Stockard. Wow, so Will Smith properly was in love with Stockard Channing. And he said that she was such an old pro, she realised what was going on. And eventually they did meet. He said that she never stopped asking him about Cherie and the baby.
Yep.
Because she knew what was going on.
That she knew and it was embarrassing. It stopped. But meanwhile, it just killed their marriage, basically. So that's the end of that.
But the film did Will Smith as an actor a world of good. Because Stockard Channing was nominated for an Oscar for that role in that film. So Will Smith is attached to that.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden people are like, oh, hey, we didn't realise Will Smith could do this.
Yeah, it's gravitas, the actors as well. Donald Sutherland, Sir Ian. Do you know what? I have to say this. I thought this was amazing when he said, right, how do I become the most famous person in the world, in the universe? And I think he got invited to the opening of Planet Hollywood in Sydney.
Yes.
And there was Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis and Sylvester Stallone, the three mega film stars. Right, I'm going to go and I'm going to try and ask them what the answer is. So he goes there. The three wise men will have it.
Yes.
So he goes there and he manages to muscle his way in. And at this exact point, there's no one talking to them. He introduces himself. And he could see they look a bit annoyed. And he says, I want to become like you guys. I want to be the biggest movie star in the world. What's your tip? Can you tell me your secret? And they all look at each other and seem to assign Arnie to the job of answering. And he says, you have to do all the promotion for every film you get. So they'll ask you to go on this show, that show, travel the world promoting the film. Do all of it. Because what they're actually doing is paying for you to promote yourself. And if you think of it that way, it's like you're campaigning to be president of the universe. That's brilliant advice. And he takes it, but he takes it and the rest. So he says, right, who does the most promotion of any actor ever? Tom Cruise. He gets Tom Cruise's schedule for wherever he goes. He asks for what Tom Cruise's press schedule was. And he does about four and a half hours on the red carpet.
Yeah.
He says, I will do two more hours than Tom Cruise does wherever I go. I mean, that is insane dedication to become ruler of the world. And then he goes, I don't know how to do 2 hours more. What have I got over Tom? How can I beat Tom Cruise? He goes, music.
Yeah.
So he starts setting up stages and doing free gigs outside the premieres of all of his films. His drive to win over everybody is that intense. I mean, if you want it, that's what you do. And he did it and he got it.
And that is a masterstroke, what he did. The whole marriage of the films and the music, like especially Men in Black, which I think at the time became the second biggest box office hit of all time, mainly due to the fact that he recorded that song, Men in Black.
Exactly.
So the video, which was on high rotation on MTV, was basically a constant trailer.
And Wild Wild West.
Wild Wild West.
And he says, by my rationing, he does all these maths. He says, if the film was grossing 280 million, but I went to Japan, Russia, and I got 20 million more, 8 million more there, I get 10% of that, so I'm now making this much more. The film's making this, everyone's happy, I'm promoting myself. Oh my God, he's like a robot.
Yeah.
Absolutely programmed for the biggest success of all, and he does it. But he can't unprogram himself. He is self-destructing now. He's in the middle of it. Oh, yeah. So once his divorce papers had come through, he phoned Jada and said, are you seeing anyone? She said, no, they've only met a couple of times now. Or once. And she, no, right, well, you're seeing me now, all right? Okay, catch you later. And she's like, okay. Yeah. He just commanded her. So this is why she actually does love him, but she did have to fight to get equal billing.
Basically. Yeah, right. The first time Will brought Jada home to meet Gigi, his grandmother.
Yeah.
Will says to Gigi, oh, let's watch one of her films while we're waiting for
this
her.
This is his beloved, God-loving grandmother who doesn't even want him to swear in any rap lyrics.
Right. And he says to Jada, how long are you going to be? She says, an hour. And he says, oh, right, I know this film. About an hour in, Jada's completely naked, shagging a man on screen.
Yeah.
So he puts that
almost
film on.
Almost porn, he said.
To time it. So when Jada walks in, just before she walks in, Granny has seen her butt naked shagging a man on screen. And that's exactly how it pans out. Granny is appalled. Jada is humiliated.
He thinks it's hilarious.
Will thinks it's the funniest thing in the world. And he even says, to this very moment, however, Jada has never even cracked a smile, not even the tiniest chuckle about it. Oh, I wonder why.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, this may divide people. I'm in the it's not funny.
It's not funny. I don't care that it divides people. The people who think it's funny are wrong.
Yeah.
He's so confused that Granny or Jada didn't think it was funny that he has to write about it 20 years later in his autobiography in the vain hope that somebody might say, oh, well, no, it's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like it's not. It's wrong.
There's loads of these things. And he does seem to have some self-awareness. No, I don't know. There's lots of stories he puts in there that paint him terribly, but I think he's hoping that lots of people will side with him.
Yeah, I don't even think he thinks that they're terrible.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think he'll hope that a lot of people will side with him who are reading this book, which they probably will, a lot of people.
You know what it is?
What?
It's the curse of being the biggest box office star in the world. You're surrounded by yes people who blow smoke up your ass.
Everyone will read it. He thinks they'll already go, you're right, Will.
You don't realise that not everybody in the world is treating you and thinks as highly of you as the people who are immediately around you, who have latched onto your fame and fortune for personal gain. You know, people lie to your face when you're massively famous like that, because they want to exist in your sphere of celebrity. Yeah, so he thinks everybody holds him in that regard.
Right.
So when he talks about these stupid pranks that are actually really out of order, he thinks we're all going to say, oh, Will, you're so funny. No, you're showing signs of being a fucking sociopath.
Yeah, it's right. I mean, he organises this 40th birthday party for her.
Oh, my God. Even when I started reading this, I'm just like, oh, this is so wrong.
She's 37 and he goes, I know how she'll love me even more. I'm going to plan this amazing 40th. And it's 3 days. And all she ever wants is a quiet life. She said it over and over again. He buys this Dallas-sized ranch, which is his dream. She says, it's not mine. I don't want to live like this. He buys it anyway. Yeah. And he says, that's the mistake. If she doesn't want it, she'll never want it. But he goes ahead anyway. You can see why they've had some difficulties. But yeah, he arranges this birthday party. And he's spent 3 years putting together this film of the history of her life, all the way back to slavery in her family. He's taken his son, their son, out with him to meet relatives. I've been thinking about it loads afterwards, thinking, yeah, if they'd have just done that together, if he'd have said, you want to investigate your history, shall we do it together? Let's do it. Don't have to film it. You don't have to present it. It would be a real journey to go on together to get to the background of who you are. And that would have been a lovely bonding thing to do. Instead, he has to work on it, film it, have all these emotional revelations, just him and his son, and then present it for this 40th in front of an audience so he can look like an amazing husband.
But whilst he's talking in this book about planning this amazing party, which from an objective point of view sounds like an amazing party, of course. But when he even starts talking about it, he says, oh, I'm going to throw this big party for Jada's 40th. This was going to be my big triumph. Right there, my big triumph. He says, it's a 3-day thing. So like the first day, everybody's just hanging out and having, he says, I want everybody just to do what they please. Then it's going to be my time to shine. It's like it's your wife's 40th birthday. And then he says, I can overhear some of the other women teasing their husbands. When I turn 40, you better plan me a party like Will. Again, it's all about him.
Yep.
As I'm reading this, I'm thinking, Jada's not going to like this.
Yeah, I know.
And even when there's no clues she doesn't like it until after he's played that massive video about her history. They go back to the hotel room. She doesn't speak to him at all. Well, he's completely dumbfounded because he thinks he's just been the best husband in the world. Bearing in mind, there's still another day of this party tomorrow. Yep. Only thing she says when she comes out of the shower is, I don't want to do anything tomorrow. And he's like, what? I've literally just thrown you the best thing. It was 3 years in the making. Yep. And she says, quote, that was the most disgusting display of ego I have ever seen in my life.
Yep.
So she nailed him.
Yes.
And he actually says, ego. He says, you are the most ungrateful. I ain't doing shit for you ever again. She says, good. I don't want shit from you anyway. And then they flew home in silence and they didn't speak to each other for a week.
Not long after that, he says, I'm retiring from trying to make you happy. And they agree that they can't make each other happy. They have to find happiness on their own. And that's when they agree to separate. And that is 2016. They agree to live separate lives and seek happiness separately while still operating as a unit. To bring up their family and
so as far as the outside world are concerned, they're still very much a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
But
they love each other, they don't want to get divorced, but they're not making each other happy and they have to go separate ways. It all came out recently that she was seeing some young musician half her age.
Austin, and he was off August something.
Yeah. But it's fine because they've
okay, so that's fine. They're not getting on. They've agreed to consciously uncouple behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But it's a charade for the rest of us because they like their family unit and it gives them a certain sense of privacy. Okay, so if that happened in 2016, how then, 6 years later, are you sat yelling, keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth?
Yeah.
It just makes no sense.
Because they've agreed to continue
to operate together. So it's a charade. So again, like when he smashed those windows and he said, it didn't come from inside, I was just doing what I thought I should do. So he's still projecting to the world about being the perfect husband and father. So when somebody insults his wife, he then has to maintain that by showing he's the best husband in the world by punching somebody in the face. But it works
because she said it's now made me never ever know that I can never leave this man.
But in what sense are they back together?
They're this power couple, aren't they? They do deserve each other. I really think they are the right people for each other. They're egotistical, egomaniac.
I absolutely love that one of the things Jada did to kind of save their partnership was made them sit down. They each had to write a list of their priorities. And Jada was like, at the top is the children. And then secondly, it's Will. And then it's herself, wasn't it?
No, anyway, she wasn't even on her own list.
Right. And then Will's list.
Me.
Number one, me. Secondly, Jada, three, the children. Yeah. I mean, oh my God.
And four, career.
Yeah.
But he's like they say in the plane, you've got to put the mask on you before you can help everyone else. If I sort me out, then I get his thinking.
No, I don't. I think it's just a terrible... I think he's the biggest ego in the world.
But you know what? This is like, we always say all these rock stars, they put themselves first and their careers first. They put their wives and kids second, third, fourth. That's what they all do. And he does sort of go a little way into analysing that.
He says everything comes second to the dream.
Yes.
Yeah. So then don't have a wife and family.
Yeah, but he also thinks that that's the way to do it. He thinks... You work your ass off. That's what his dad did. He worked his ass off to make sure they all had food on table.
Yeah, and his dad wasn't
nice
happy.
House. And his kids weren't happy.
Yeah.
But he just repeats it because that's what people do. And he's like making the dream happen so that they can have this dream. Of course they're going to get messed up because we all know this. But at least he's got some awareness. And he's in their ranch. He's built a studio. So anytime the kids feel like an album coming on, they can go and record one. Then his kid Willow.
Love this.
They've had a couple of kids.
Yeah, oh yeah, they've had a couple.
Jayden,
they've had
Jayden and Willow. Yeah, Willow suddenly records that song, Whip My Hair Back and
Forth. That's massive. She has this massive hit as what, a 10-year-old?
She's 9, I think.
Wow, I whip my hair. And she has long braided hair that she whips back and forth
in the
video.
She's very, very cool.
She's very cool. And she gets a supporting slot opening for Justin Bieber, who at this time is the biggest star in the world musically.
On planet, yeah.
So she's opening for him. She's a massive star at the age of 9 with a massive
hit.
Record.
One hit.
Yeah. No, but she's
but it's big.
Big.
And she's great. And she does a 30-day European tour. And then Will's like, well done, you're amazing. Are you ready for the Australian tour? No, Daddy, I'm finished now. Yeah, but no, I'm finished. He's like, no. And they go home and he's not listening to her. So she shaves her hair off.
I love this. First of all, I love that she decided she didn't want the pop career.
Yeah. I've Googled her now. She's about 23. She's following a pop career. She's got quite a few albums out. And the latest interview I read of her was going, I didn't realise I had to work this hard to get this.
Right,
and I was like, ah, yeah, because it just happened to you that easily.
Yeah, of course.
So when the second time came round, she's a bit older and knows what she wants. She's really having to work for it, which is good.
Also, I think that little girl, Willow, shaving her head like that, which I think is just such amazing rebellion at that age.
It is genius.
Also, she knows what her dad is like. She's picked up on it.
Yeah.
And so she took action. She took irretrievable action.
Yeah.
She knew she was probably going to be made. Because her dad's a disciplinarian, right? Yes. Like his dad.
Yes.
And so she's thinking, oh, my biggest hit is called I'll Whip My Hair Back and Forth. I'll shave my hair off and then I can't do it anymore. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Meanwhile, Jaden is becoming an actor because he was hanging out with his dad reading a script where he needed a son. He's going, well, I'm actually your son, so I wouldn't even have to act that. Anyway, he has to go through thorough auditions and then does get this part. And then after that, on the back of it, they make Karate Kid with him because he's really good.
With Jackie Chan.
Yeah, with Jackie Chan. But there's some point, and again, it's a little thing where he says, I realise now when I used to turn up on the Karate Kid set, he used to slump into a bit of depression because it meant that I'd be going, do that again, film that again, let's stay late to get this right. It's not right yet. I was a real disciplinarian. I was no fun, and he hated it when I came anywhere near it. So I'm going to do it again and do it right this time. And then they made a bad film together.
Yeah, that's a shame of it, isn't it? When they decide to do it properly, it just tanks.
Yeah, but it also is a little insight into him being a control freak, annoying parent.
Yeah.
That he doesn't even want around. And after he made the bad film with his son, when he was 16, he actually inquired about emancipation from his parents.
Oh, damn it.
So you know they're not having the best time.
Yeah. Just in terms of parenting, so obviously we've skipped ahead and Will now has two children with Jada who are grown up, but also he has this older child, Trey, with Cherie, and Will wants full custody of Trey, and Cherie is like, no, I want to keep custody. Anyway, it comes down to an argument. Cherie wants Trey to go to school and to go to bed at a certain hour.
Not like, travel all the way around the world all the time.
Yeah, and Will is like, well, I'd like my son to forge his own way in life and he can go to bed when he's tired as long as his chores are done. Mm. So it gets into an argument, but they both demand full custody. And then Will Smith says, so what am I supposed to do? Just let her mess up my son. And it's like, she literally wants him to go to school.
The opposite, yeah.
And wants him to go to bed at a reasonable hour.
Be a bit normal.
Yeah, and he says, oh, mess up my son. It's his terrible ego.
This is probably why he was good in that role of training up Venus and Serena Williams, because he knows about having kids and wanting them to be absolutely excellent. So Trey actually becomes a fairly normal person. They consider it a triumph that they managed to be in Singapore for the filming of Karate Kid and fly back for every single one of his games. And it's not.
No.
You're just turning up and then leaving again.
Yeah.
That's just clocking it in, ticking a box.
Yeah.
Not really there for him.
It is also, it's kind of like they were both at the Oscars because Will was nominated for his first Best Actor Oscar. But Willow had a fever and then Granny phoned Jada and said it's gone over 100 degrees. 6 minutes before the Best Actor Oscar was announced, Will and Jada make this big dash out of the arena and over to the hospital. It's almost like performative parenting.
Mm.
You know, as much as he's being a husband and smashing stuff,
right.
This is almost like performing at being the best
by
parents
the
in the world.
Yeah.
If you were actually really good parents and your kid was
you'd
ill,
have already been there.
Yeah, you wouldn't have gone to the bloody Oscars. Or the dad would if he was nominated and mum can stay at home.
Well, it's like you're managing and scheduling your career and your family and it's all managed and scheduled. But this is why when they finally split up and he has to go and try and find himself, it's really interesting, actually, when he goes to Trinidad and he goes on his own, he says he hasn't even carried his own
that
luggage.
That is quite funny.
Ever. Yeah. But the best bit, I think, is when they go out in a boat and he's fallen asleep. He's woken up and all of the people who were on this boat are now just lolling about in the sea. They're lolling about for ages. So he's pacing around and he's like, oh, my phone doesn't work out here. I can't do anything. What are they doing down there? Eventually calls down. What are you all doing? We're just chilling out in the sea. Come and join us. Imagine warm water and sunshine and everything. And he's like, what? He goes, he has to eventually admit, I don't know how to do nothing. I don't know how to relax. I don't know how to not be achieving all the time. Oh, my God, I'm addicted to winning. I'm addicted to achieving. That's the beginning. I might have to try and get in the sea, just see if I can do nothing. And he never has. And he realises when you never stop, you never have to feel anything. You never have to think about feelings. And he hasn't thought about his family's feelings, his own feelings. It's just achieve, schedule, tick that off. And he's never stopped.
He also says, in terms of his family, his wife and his kids, he says that he wants to be the best provider and protector, and I would die for them. But he never considered their feelings.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. So you can do all of that for everyone. I get that he would absolutely put his life on the line. But just from living in the house with him, he almost doesn't care about you.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it's like the thing, it's a performance thing of it. I'm going to protect and provide for my family. Actually, behind closed doors, I don't care. There's an amazing bit, I think it's Christmas or Thanksgiving, where they're playing Monopoly.
Yeah.
And just because he's so entirely competitive, Jada loves playing Monopoly. It's his big family thing. Her family always used to do at get-togethers. Yeah. And they're playing Monopoly. And Will Smith gets a chance to take Jada out really early in the game. And he does it.
He's like, boom, I'm going to buy that and build houses and I'm going to wipe you out and you'll be bankrupt. She's like, do you really want to do this on Christmas Eve? You're playing Monopoly with your family? Do you really want to do this? Yeah.
Yeah. He says, I was totally certain I did want to take her out.
He takes her out and she kissed him on the head, kissed everyone on the head, said good night, went to bed.
Oh, my God. Do you know, just before he says that in the book, he says, these days I can tell something was shifting. Jada was having almost daily crying spells. Now in the mornings, she would wake up sobbing. During one stretch, she cried for 45 days straight.
Yeah, that's depression. That's serious depression.
It's also being married to Will Smith.
Yeah, I know.
Then he gets this amazing therapist, right, who he has for years.
Yeah.
And they have such a good relationship. She sounds fantastic, actually. They have a really good relationship and he just does this massive therapy for like...
Because he's so bloody minted that his journey to find his soul is incredibly expensive. It's like flying all over the world to go diving. He won't just learn to swim, he'll master the sea. You know what I mean? Even that's almost competitive.
So he really is, after all these years in the industry and being the world's biggest film star and having problems with his wife and kids, etc., etc., he has gone to great lengths actually to do soul searching, to go to therapy, to have all these spiritual experiences, to make sense of himself.
It just sounds incredibly indulgent still, though.
You know what it is.
I don't think he's found it. I think he's working so hard at it.
Oh, he hasn't found
it.
If he found it, he would not have slapped somebody on live TV.
He wouldn't have written this book, no. Paying all this money to fly around the world to go scuba diving because you've got to conquer the sea and that's going to help you. He's not got it. He said he spent 14 days with himself and he was sick by the end of it. He couldn't wait to get away from himself. He hasn't found peace.
I know how he feels after reading this book. Just to go back to the ego thing.
Yeah.
Throughout this book, I really felt patronised by him. He almost, it's fair enough, it's his autobiography. He can tell us what he's done. He can tell us how he felt about it. But also there are these passages where he thinks at the age of 50-something, after all this therapy, that he sat on top of a mountain with the Dalai Lama.
And they're really enlightening
passages
that he's writing for us to help us.
For our benefit.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Oprah said it's one of the best memoirs she's ever read, because I think she thinks that's kind of what it is.
She might have got a bit lost in the rich world as well.
She's out of touch.
I mean, they're right up there together.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure there are lots of people who will read this book who actually do get something out of it, but they're idiots. I don't know what else to say.
Well, we've been very entertained. And what we've got out of it is that he's a bit of an arrogant twat.
Oh, I think he's a total sociopathic monster.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like I said, I loved him. I loved the... This is all about performance.
Yes.
It's about performance as an actor, as a rapper, as a worldwide star, but performance as a partner, a husband, and a dad.
Yeah.
And I was suckered in by that performance for 30 years. And the slap undid it for me. But had I read this book, I think it's just, I don't know what he thinks he's doing with it. I think he thinks it shows him out to be this amazing, worldly, inspirational man.
And we know his roots and his old complex relationship with his dad and violence.
And I think he thinks that he's written next Long Walk to Freedom or Dreams of My Father.
Do actually,
yeah, I do. I do, because he does all these passages of inspirational talk that you just think, oh, shut up.
That's the way that him and Jada talk all the time. That's the way she talks in her conversation around the table. She's absolutely getting to the bottom of
things. So did you watch them?
Yeah.
I couldn't bear it.
No, I didn't watch a lot because I found it really arrogant.
Yeah.
And also, I'm just not that good on non-stop seriousness.
Yeah.
I need a bit of light thrown in. For me to be palatable. If you've got to have a sense of humour with it, there's none at all. It's so heavy.
Do you know what? It's such a shame, because I have to say that the Will Smith that I knew and loved, humour was such a big part of it.
Yeah.
With the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and his films, he's genuinely funny and kind and charismatic and lovable.
Yeah.
Thing is, I think he'll ultimately be all right. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens to him over the next few years and if he is allowed back into Hollywood, because he's kind of been pushed out a bit, hasn't he?
See, I don't know. Okay, what do you predict?
In a couple of years, he'll go and do a low-budget movie like he did with Stockard Channing. He'll get back into the method acting and he'll pull out a really good performance and people will say, oh, what's Will Smith doing?
Yeah.
And they'll go and he'll work his way back up slowly and humbly if he can, but it will be a performance.
Yeah. Yes, because you know, like people like Posh and Bex, they're such a business. It could be that Jada is now saying, I'll never leave Will because of that slap. It could be that that was a business move for both of them
so
to stay
right.
on top.
You're so right. That's exactly what it is. The whole thing is a sham.
Because they are millions of dollars business, aren't they? The two of them, an enterprise. They own companies together. I mean, they're huge. Bloody hell. It's so interesting.
I took objection to a lot of this book, but I didn't hate reading it.
No, it's unputdownable.
Yeah.
It would be very interesting to read Jada's take on all of this.
God.
It might be really even more annoying.
Yeah.
It might.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Thrift Shop Biography. We love making this podcast and we're absolutely thrilled that so many of you are already listening. You could really help us out by leaving us a review somewhere, wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you could share us, tell your friends about us, or drop some links on social media. We have a Facebook page called Thrift Shop Biography, so make sure you come over there to hear about the episodes first and what else we're up to. Okay, see you next week. And if you're new here, there are loads more episodes now to go and listen in the back catalogue, so make sure you go and enjoy them. Okay, thank you very much.